Thank you. Yeah, I'm not going to speak about dynamo experiments, but about a topic which is connected with Axel's talk at Monday and maybe with the mean field dynamo talks in 2 days before. I will speak about the test field method in mean field electrodynamics. Why doesn't it work? No, something is wrong.
Page down. It's in German, so
Ah, yeah, here. I can produce the first and the last slide, but not the others in between.
somebody speak German?
Is this up and down?
I can't help.
Try it again. Okay, then I should do it.
It's in German.
No, something is wrong.
Yeah, you can click on the
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I think this seems to work. Thank you. Okay, consider a problem which is described by the induction equation, and either the velocity is given or it is defined by a momentum balance. And assume that you have a situation which is described or for which it is reasonable to make a mean field theory. That means a split the velocity and the magnetic field into mean and fluctuating parts, and then you get the mean field induction equation, which contains a mean electromotive force due to the fluctuations. So I Okay, if you want to calculate this mean electromotive force, you need to know the fluctuating B, and from the induction equation and the average induction equation, you get this equation for B. G is an abbreviation for the nonlinear terms. B is, you see it from this equation, a functional of U, U bar, and B bar. And if you consider it as this functional, then it is linear in B bar. Maybe these quantities have itself a dependence on the mean magnetic field, but as long as you consider this as a function of these quantities, it is linear in B. And if you then calculate the electromotive force, okay, you find that there's a term which is independent on the magnetic field and a term which is linear on the magnetic field. This kernel depends on the motion only, and in the case of the turbulence, it is only markedly different from zero in a certain surrounding of the point in which you consider the electromotive force. Okay. So, that is what we had on the slide before. Then it makes sense to make a Taylor expansion of the mean field in this way, and then you arrive at a representation of the mean electromotive force in this way. Here is a term independent of B, here are terms with B, and the three dots stand for terms of this higher spatial or time derivatives. It is important to have in mind that this usual representation, or for the isotropic case, this is an approximation. You have, if you apply it, you have to justify that you have not higher derivatives, that they are negligible, and that you have not this term which is independent on the magnetic field. Okay, you have to calculate these coefficients. The traditional way of calculating them is the second order correlation approximation, which is just by putting the nonlinear terms equal to zero. And the classical result is, for example, for the alpha effect, this representation of the alpha effect, or if you consider the high conductivity, low eta limit, then you arrive at this classical formula for the alpha effect. The range of applicability of this result is in this limit, which we considered, defined by the requirement that the Struhal number, defined with characteristic values of velocity and length, is much smaller than unity. And this is not a good thing. Natural turbulences have Struhal numbers in the order of one. So you can proceed to higher order approximations, but it is very troublesome to do this. So the test field method has proved to be a useful tool. Start again with the equation for small b. Assume, for example, this. That means drop the term E0 and assume that higher derivatives of b derivatives are without interest, and choose a suitable set of test fields, calculate the corresponding small b's with this relation, just this, but now here is the test field, one copy of a test field, and the bn are the response to the test field, and calculate then the electromotive force with this test field, and write down again this equation now with the test fields, and you have calculated these. So this, this, and this is known, and if you have enough test fields, that means enough equations of this type, you can solve them and find in this way the coefficients. This is a simple idea of the test field method. The method has been developed in papers by Schirmer and others, where magnetoconvection, spherical magnetoconvection models were considered, and simple geodynamos, and from numerical simulations of these objects, the mean field coefficients were extracted, and then mean field models were constructed, which indeed, I don't want to speak about the details, but you reproduce more or less what you gain if you average the results of the direct numerical solution in simulations. In between, quite a few papers have been made in which this method is applied. Let me discuss a few features of this method. Test field methods should be, of course, linearly independent in order to lead to systems of equations from which you can solve the A and the B. The first or the higher order derivatives of B should be zero. This is the assumption you have made here. They need not to satisfy, the test fields need not to satisfy any boundary condition, and they also don't need to be solenoidal. You calculate the En from this equation, then the coefficients depend only on the velocities, u bar and u, and not on the test fields. And so you are free to change to use any test fields for this method. A remark in a paper by Pastor Cataneo and David Hughes is more restrictive, says that the test fields should be close to the mean fields you want to have. It's a not necessary restriction. Yeah. Okay. But what I want to say and is you get correct results for the A and B, even if you take test fields which are quite different from the fields you have in mind as solution of the main problem. Okay. You can, in this understanding, I try to explain the velocity fields may depend on B. Nevertheless, you get correct results for the A and B, and this means that this method is suitable for investigation of quenching, of magnetic quenching. I hope I have demonstrated by the slides before that this method implies no approximation. Of course, this equation is an approximation, but if you accept this, you introduce no further approximation, as for example, canceling nonlinear terms also. Okay. In the papers I mentioned, except the first by Schrinner, the method was used on in very special cases where the mean field was defined by averaging over X and Y, for example, and so it depended only on Z. Then you can express all derivatives of B by J, defined as curl of B, and you have to deal with this relation only, choose then these test fields, four test fields, then you can calculate immediately, you can solve the systems of equations, and you can calculate immediately the alpha ij and the eta ij. Of course, as long as you remain with this relation, the results are only of interest in the limit of small k. But let me explain some extension of this ideas. If you have not this local connection between the mean electromotive force and B and derivatives of B, you may, for example, write this here, the alpha ij and the eta ij are kernels of these integrals. So, or you can write it in the Fourier language here. And then you have the same relations we had before with a k dependence here, and they make sense for arbitrary k Okay, it's this way you determine at least the Fourier transforms of the kernels here. Okay, that's what I wanted to say. I hope that I convinced you that this method is really a useful, powerful method in mean field electrodynamics.
Anybody? Phil Livermore, I think, got there first.
So one of the crucial approximations you have to make is that E0 can be neglected.
E0 can be unequal zero in the case when you have a small-scale dynamo. It need not to be. For example, in the case of an isotropic turbulence, you have no isotropic vector by definition. You have no preferred direction, no isotropic vector, then it is again equal to zero, despite the existence of a small-scale dynamo. But it can only live from small-scale dynamos.
Okay, but so how... If you impose a fixed finite mean field and you generate, say, an exponentially growing small-scale field...
Yeah.
How do you make sense of this within the... test field method.
This is basically the existence of the small-scale field, small-scale dynamo field, doesn't disturb this procedure, but it could be a technical difficulty. And I think Axel already mentioned that he could then, from time to time, this growing field equal to zero.
In that case, I would actually say the E naught is finite, but it is a vector that can rotate in the xy direction randomly, and it's therefore over time still isotropic.
What do you mean by this case?
In the case of a small scale dynamo, so I would put the zero term as the reason. That's the manifestation of the small-scale dynamo. I would agree with that. And you can separate the two, for example, by time averaging, provided the alpha coefficient is time-independent. And, of course, the test field is time-independent. So, therefore, all the other terms are time-independent, and it's only this E-naught term, which is time-dependent but exponentially growing. So you have to be sure that you can average such a thing out. And that's a technical issue.
But it remains if you have an isotropic turbulence, then you have no E0.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes, Carrie.
So I think what I'm going to throw out is a challenge here. In the experiments, at least the Madison experiment, we have a nearly axisymmetric system in which we detect mean field driven currents, and the way we do that is by applying a test field from the outside.
Yeah.
And then we're able to diagnose the currents and see that Ohm's law doesn't make sense. So my challenge, I think, is there a generalization of this which can be applied from externally generated fields, and then by measuring the currents that are in the experiment, can you unravel the form of Ohm's law or the terms that are driving it in the experiment? And I think perhaps there are things that could be done. This would be an application to experiment rather than to try to understand the simulations.
I think that the externally applied field should be added to the mean magnetic field you have. It has nothing to do with this E0 term.
Yeah. The measurement is a net current, right? It's inside that is the EMF plus a...
Yeah.
Yeah. So the EMF is determined by measuring the mean current minus the part that comes from the mean flow and the mean EMF.
Yeah.
And so that tells you, you can measure what the mean EMF has to be.
Yeah.
Challenge to figure out in an
Yeah, I have no immediate answer, but I think we have to discuss it. How to apply it to the experiment.
Okay, any other comments?
Just as a response here to your question, it is important to realize that one has to solve an equation that is not really the induction equation anymore. It's if you want to highlight this equation for little b pq again, it's a special equation that one has to solve in the numerics, and one has to solve it for four different test fields. And so, of course, you can't do such a thing in an experiment. So I think it's really an advantage of the numerical simulations
here. I think the answer is this external field is equivalent to the B mean, what we have used there, but it is not the test field. The test field you may choose independently. Test field is just a theoretical, a method on the level of theory.
Okay, I think that's it for today. So, have a nice picnic. and see you back here at 9 o'clock on Thursday then. Picnic's on the beach, yeah. So we'll be walking down from here. So just follow the crowd. It's a 5-minute walk down towards Galita Beach.